across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Friday morning, September 6th, 2024. 60 days until Election Day. And it's another beautiful morning across Wisconsin to have you here up north from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, on the Civic Media app, on demand by podcast, through social media. Nice to have you here to get the day started. I've got a question for you. Would you like to hear an interview with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and one of our favorite Civic Media peeps, Chad Holmes? Well, then stick around. Because 3 hours from right now at 9:06 on the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, Chad Holmes will have an interview with vice presidential running mate, Democratic nominee, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Again, that's on Bow Falls Radio at 9:06. You can catch that in the Wausau area, or you can listen through the Civic Media app. So tune in for that and listen to that conversation that's coming up later today. On this Friday morning, here's what we've got coming up on our program. First, a dose of rural respect. You see, while Donald Trump is promising tariffs and trade wars that could cripple American agriculture, President Biden told a crowd in western Wisconsin yesterday about the next round of investments that he's making to expand the rural economy. We'll talk about that. We'll talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil about the growing number of lifelong Republicans who understand that it's not enough to simply say they're not going to vote for Trump. They're publicly advocating voting for Kamala Harris as a good measure to help protect American democracy and rebuild, eventually, the Republican Party. Then, in our second hour, former President Trump was in New York on Thursday. He was asked for a policy to solve the child care crisis. He offered up 2 minutes of straight gibberish with no coherent idea to address the problem. But you'd never know it from reading mainstream media write-ups. We're going to talk to Mark Jacob. He and others are branding that kind of reporting as sane washing. And we're going to talk about how it's long past time that journalists stop pretending that Trump is speaking like any normal public official or any normal person for that matter, through the practice of cherry picking a few words and trying to fill in the blanks of what Trump is trying to say, and instead let the voters understand, or at least try to understand, the rambling stream of consciousness that actually doesn't say a damn thing. So we have that. We're actually going to play that for you coming up this half hour as well and talk about it with Mark Jacob around 7:30. Along the way, as always, you can call into the show at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Or if you're watching us on social media, on Facebook or on YouTube, use that comment section. We'll see your comment or question. Might put it up on screen and respond to it on the show, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Brewers were off yesterday. They open up a series with the Colorado Rockies. First pitch is at 5:10, not 7:10, 5:10. They've moved the game up because, as those of you watching the video part of our show can tell, it's time to wear some green and gold again as the Packers get set to kick off their season tonight. So here to kick off our season of pretending to care about football more than any normal people should, it's Pat Breitlove in Chippewa Falls and Greg Bach in Waukesha. Mr. Bach, good morning.
I am ready for some football.
He said in his red t-shirt, there's no green and gold over there whatsoever. What's up with that? Oh, that's right. It's Friday. We don't normally play football on Fridays, NFL football.
And when we do, we play it in America.
And we play it in America. Well, South America. So I guess I'll be ready for it. You know, I honestly still haven't decided whether to go to our local watering hole or just pay the $8 for Peacock and watch it on the couch because it's Friday night. You know, it's like it starts past my bedtime. What has happened to me? You got tomorrow off,
so come on, man.
I know.
I see value in both as far as, like, just an evening on the... You have... Pat, I will never be able to convey to you how jealous I am when you say things like, it's Friday, I'm just sitting on the couch and do nothing. I'm like, oh, that sounds amazing.
Oh, I know. And again, it's the kind of thing we can do now as empty nesters. And we still, sometimes we'll just look at each other and say to Sherry, you know, for the first 30 years of doing this, you know, we couldn't just sit on the couch and watch TV. And we'd watch our parents, you know, sitting on the couch watching TV. Meanwhile, we're packing up kids for daycare, or we're taking our high school kids to activities, or we've got things going on, and things are finally slowing down. We're like, this actually isn't a bad gig compared to, you know, we got to take the dog to the vet. You know, we got to do all this. We got, you know, got to mow the lawn. And I mean, we're still doing some of those things, but not nearly as much as the rush that you are when you're a little younger. So I get the point. I just wanted to make the point that we haven't always been this sedentary, and we're kind of liking it right now, you know?
I live it up. I mean, but there's also something really fun about, like, hey, let's go down to the bar and watch some of the Packer game. Or, like, watch the Packer game for, like, maybe the first quarter or two, and come home at the halftime and watch it on Peacock.
That I have done in the past with the night games, especially with this new shift. So that may very well be the case. The problem is, and I don't want to get any places or people in trouble here, but, you know, nobody just watches the game. You already know that. I mean, we play something called the flag game, where every time somebody, a penalty flag is thrown, somebody walks around and everybody has to put a quarter in the bucket or whatever. And then they draw a name at the half and at the end of the game, and somebody wins all those quarters that were put in for penalty flags. That's one of the many games. I'm making sure to put these in finger quotes, games that we play. And there are all kinds of games in all kinds of gathering places in Wisconsin. I know one place where if you roll some dice and there's a particular number that day, you know, you could shake the dice. Some might call it a shake of the day. I've heard about this. And sometimes if you were to roll 4 ones in a single roll on your third roll, you might come away with $86. So I've heard. So I might go back to that watering hole today. I don't know. I hear these things.
I went to a bar that has a shake of the day, and when they said, do you want a shake of the day? I'm like, ooh, it sounds like a frosty, cool adult beverage. It's sweet. I'm like, oh, it's a dice game.
Yes. It's all part of the customs that you have to learn when you're in a particular area. And around here, that is definitely one. There's another one that does like 3 different ones. There's a farmer version where there's 10 dice. And
oh, my God.
I know. See, it can really get to be a bit much, you know, so we try to treat it just for fun. And sometimes it's a lot of fun, which is why I'm on Amazon right now, trying to find out what I can buy for $86. But anyway, let's get back. Did you know that in the Up North News Daily newsletter, we talk about the Packers today, and every Packers home game generates about $15 million in revenue for Brown County and the city of Green Bay?
What?
Yeah.
You know, amazing.
The tickets, the sales taxes, the bars, the restaurants, gas stations, you name it. I mean, 80% of fans travel more than 50 miles to get to Lambeau Field. And they spend money, you know, while they're there and on the way there. Yeah. So, yeah, there's real economic impact to having the Packers in the smallest market in the NFL.
That's amazing.
Also in the newsletter is a link to our conversation last week with Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. So if you want to be part of all of that, you can sign up for our newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the top banner, and be a subscriber to our newsletter. Let's do this. Let's get Trump out of the way here. Donald Trump, and we're going to talk, like I said, we'll talk more at 7:30. But I have to answer. Donald Trump was asked at the Economic Club of New York or something. Listen to the question. It asks for a specific policy on the crisis of finding quality, affordable child care. And Trump is all in about tariffs on imports, as if that's a tax on countries. It's not. The consumer pays that. It's a tax on the middle class. But he thinks it's going to cure everything. Listen to this answer about child care.
If you win in November, can you commit to prioritizing legislation to make childcare affordable? And if so, what specific piece of legislation will you advance?
Well, I would do that, and we're sitting down. You know, I was somebody. We had Senator Marco Rubio, and my daughter Ivanka was so impactful on that issue. It's a very important issue. But I think when you talk about the kind of numbers that I'm talking about, that because, look, childcare is childcare. It's couldn't, you know, there's something, you have to have it. In this country, you have to have it. But when you talk about those numbers compared to the kind of numbers that I'm talking about by taxing foreign nations at levels that they're not used to, but they'll get used to it very quickly. And it's not going to stop them from doing business with us, but they'll have a very substantial tax when they send product into our country. Those numbers are so much bigger than any numbers that we're talking about, including childcare, that it's going to take care. We're going to have, I look forward to having no deficits within a fairly short period of time. Coupled with the reductions that I told you about on waste and fraud and all of the other things that are going on in our country, because I have to stay with childcare. I want to stay with childcare, but those numbers are small relative to the kind of economic numbers that I'm talking about, including growth, but growth also headed up by what the plan is that I just told you about. We're going to be taking in trillions of dollars, and as much as childcare is talked about as being expensive, it's relatively speaking not very expensive compared to the kind of numbers we'll be taking in. We're going to make this into an incredible country that can afford to take care of its people, and then we'll worry about the rest of the world. Let's help other people, but we're going to take care of our country first. This is about America first. It's about make America great again. We have to do it because right now we're a failing nation. So we'll take
care of it. What are you applauding for? What are you applauding? What are you applauding? Why? What the hell was that? That's all I want to know. There was no child care answer in there. It was, if we're going to jack up tariffs so high, we can solve child care, health care, take care of other countries. There's not a shred of evidence that that worked. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm being told the moderator actually responded to Trump's answer to that question. Let's listen back to that.
Mr. Madison, what you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points.
A bittersweet milestone in today's history lesson from the Cranberries coming up in about 30 minutes. All right. Picking up where we left off, Donald Trump asked simply, what do you want to do about affordable child care? And he offered whatever the heck that was. Greg, did you pull any policy solution out of that whatsoever?
Make America great again.
Boom.
We got to put America. And the thing I really resent, this is one of the things that really rich people tend to do. It's not just a Donald Trump thing, but he's very good at it. Child care is not as expensive as people think. Yes, it is.
Yeah, actually, yes. Yes, it is.
It is. It is a, in my opinion, it is a racket. It is expensive. I have friends who don't have children because they can't, they know they can't afford health care, or not health care, but child care for their kids. And, right. And you know, they don't have a grandparent or an uncle or an aunt laying around there who can just take up the mantle. I mean, it's really disingenuous, and yes, there is no policy from that whatsoever. It was just blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. And yet, here's how New York Times reporter Michael Gold wrote it up. After his speech, Donald Trump was asked how he might address rising child care costs. In a jumbled answer, he said he would prioritize legislation on the issue, but offered no specifics and insisted that his other economic policies, including tariffs, would take care of child care. Okay, so it's got the word jumbled in there, but does that even come close to conveying what a word salad that was? You would not. If somebody saw that, they'd go, "Oh yeah, Trump kind of jumbled." You know, I understand he does that. No, folks got to listen to that answer and say, "This is a guy who clearly has no interest in solving any of these problems." And that if he just says tariffs enough times, taxing other nations, which is not what a tariff is, that will solve everything. We'll have so much money. We'll be awash in money. Don't you think we'd have done that by now if that was the actual solution?
Well, there's also a thing that I'm missing. I'm not very smart, Pat, but if, let's say, in his perfect world, we're awash in tariff money, all this tariff money. Do you think that a GOP-run government is going to, for a moment, take a dime of that money and put it towards giving any sort of subsidy or relief for childcare? No, they will not. They will hold on to that money, and they will do nothing with it that will help parents. Period. Never.
The funny thing is that Trump not only says that, you know, we're going to be so awash in money that we can solve all these problems, he goes on to say that he would like the nation to create a sovereign wealth fund, the kind of thing that like Saudi Arabia has, because they're awash in money from oil. And those sovereign wealth funds become slush funds, like the one that gave Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, $2 billion to do basically nothing. He thinks there's going to be so much money left over from tariffs when there isn't going to be any money at all, because it's not money that comes to the federal government. He, you know, Roger's absolutely right on Facebook. People need to read the word for word transcript because he said nothing. And if more people did that, we'd have less of the MAGA flag waving, and instead more people going, "What's he trying to say? What?"
If the New York Times is listening to this show right now, and I know they're fans, if they're listening to this show right now, I propose my thoughts. Here's how I would have wrote the first line to that. In a jumbled answer, I'm stealing his first line. In a jumbled answer, Donald Trump has once again proven he knows nothing about tariffs, nothing about childcare, and nothing about basic government subsidies and or monies therein. Hire me.
New York Times, pick this guy up. You can afford him. Trust me, you can get him. He's available.
I'll work for Mets tickets.
All right. Meanwhile, there's somebody out there who is in the White House, has been in the White House, who knows what they're doing, and who came to Westby yesterday to do more. That, of course, would be President Joe Biden, who was in Westby to announce the next wave of funding from the Inflation Reduction Act to invest, in this case, in rural America. $7 billion being invested through the Inflation Reduction Act, which is going to help cooperatives that serve millions of customers across 23 states to modernize. And not just to modernize and have a more efficient electric grid and distribution system, but to go cleaner and greener. Dairyland Power Cooperative, for example, is going to get about $570 million that they will use to procure more than 1,000 megawatts of renewable energy from 8 different wind and solar power purchase agreements. When it's all done, Dairyland estimates that electric rates for their members will be 42% lower over 10 years than they would have been without this kind of funding. So here's a 2-minute clip of what President Biden had to say about these investments in rural America in Westby yesterday.
Your communities are the backbone, and that's not hyper, you're the backbone of this country. You deserve the same resources as folks in our cities and our suburbs. And that's what today's announcement is all about. Generating rural power for rural America. But that's not all. Last year, I was next door with your good neighbor, Governor Waltz of Minnesota. I think the guy's gone places. Anyway. I talked about we're making the most fundamental and significant investment ever in rural America, creating new and better markets, new income streams that are generators of rural America that can grow and thrive. For example, we're taking on big corporations and doing everything from increasing competition in the meat markets to boosting domestic fertilizer production. In fact, here in Wisconsin, that means $12 million to lower fertilizer costs for farmers across the state, which also creates jobs and grows new businesses. Here in Wisconsin, we also invested $47 million to lower energy costs, install renewable and energy-efficient technologies like solar panels behind me on farms and rural small businesses. Darren just shared how that's cut his family electricity bill in half. We're helping farmers and ranchers and entrepreneurs tackle the climate crisis. Climate-smart agriculture, such as cover crops, nutrient management, storing carbon in the soil. These practices reduce the greenhouse gas emissions and improve our overall health of the soil and the water. They put us on a path to continuing to grow the food, the fuel, the fiber that will power our nation for decades to come.
How's that? How's that? Actual solutions, actual policy, and an actual emphasis on rural America. Rural America is not necessarily what got Joe Biden elected. But Joe Biden has decided that maybe it's good for a president to be president of an entire country and to make investments throughout in our cities as well as in our rural areas. And that's being done through the Inflation Reduction Act, through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, through the CHIPS and Science Act, earlier than that, through the American Rescue Plan. It's not just a bunch of bluster about starting trade wars, which would actually hurt Wisconsin farmers and hurt the rural economy. And we know that because Trump did that in his first term. And it took away a substantial market for Wisconsin soybeans. China could turn to countries like Brazil instead. If you want more of that pain, then go with the guy spewing gibberish about childcare. Otherwise, I would suggest maybe looking at who wants to invest in rural America and casting a ballot appropriately. Coming up next, Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil talks about the growing number of named Republicans who say it's not enough to oppose Trump. They want to make sure they publicly tell people they're voting for Kamala Harris. That's next. You're up north. Okay, it is time to recap some of the big stories of the week here. And for that, we've got Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil joining us from Los Angeles. Kia, hello. How are you?
Hey, I am all right, Pat. How about yourself?
I'm okay. I know that you don't follow your hometown Eagles as much as you used to, but I just want to make sure the listeners knew, like, you didn't ask Kia about his Philly roots. Like, you know, we'll see how the game goes first. How's that go?
That sounds like a good plan. I fully expect the Eagles to win, though, and to help me win my fantasy league. So,
oh, see, there's always a fantasy tie-in, of course. Let's turn to some of the stories of the week, and let's start on the Kamala Harris side of things and some of the support that she picked up this week in her presidential campaign from people about whom 10 years ago you never, never, never would have seen this coming. But between Liz Cheney, daughter of Dick Cheney, and John McCain's son, both saying this week, you know, they're voting for Vice President Harris. It just reminds us again, we are in some weird new territory, but kind of positive territory in that people are setting aside party differences for democracy?
Yeah, I think, you know, there is... it depends how you look at it. It's obviously I would say it's positive that there are, you know, some of these folks who, you know, Liz Cheney was one of the most conservative Republicans in America until
right. Still is in a real conservative manner, right?
Yeah, and so, you know, I agree with her on almost nothing, but I respect that, you know, January 6th was a red line for her in a way that it isn't for apparently any other Republican in Congress or the Senate. Who's going to, you know, other than her and Mitt Romney. So I have respect for that. And yes, we saw John McCain's son also endorse Kamala Harris. We saw, I believe it was 200 plus former, you know, Romney, McCain, Bush staffers endorse Harris. And, you know, the number should be much higher. It's frankly like grim that the vast majority of quote unquote establishment Republicans have just fallen in line over the past several years. But, you know, the fact that a handful of people haven't really underscores just how craven things have gotten on the right. But, you know, we know Donald Trump is a threat to the future of this country. He tried to overturn one election. There is no doubt in my mind, if he, you know, does not win in November, he'll try again. And that's what some of these Republicans are saying, and I'll give them credit for that.
Just to keep the focus on the vice president, and we spoke earlier about, earlier in the week, I should say, about her introducing a plan that would be a major shot in the arm for small businesses in the country.
Yeah. And, you know, this plan from Kamala Harris, she unveiled on Wednesday in New Hampshire, you know, effectively would try to reduce the startup costs for small business owners by raising a tax deduction for them from $5,000 to $50,000, you know, which would basically, you know, be a lot closer to the typical $40,000 that the most small business owners put into their business in the first year. So that would be a huge help. She also wants to sort of, you know, cut through some red tape in the tax code to make things simpler for them. And she also wants to make it easier for them to get federal funding, especially, and, you know, to work with small banks so that they will cover the interest on loans so that, you know, again, just another step that would make it easier, because most people, when they start a business, they don't have just $50,000 sitting around. They take out a loan. And so to have the interest on that loan, you know, subsidized would be a huge deal. And then there's other, you know, efforts to expand access to capital, which we know is one of the bigger issues that a lot of entrepreneurs face. And all of this is part of an effort, you know, Kamala Harris wants to have 25 million new businesses formed in her first term, which is just a massive number. And, you know, this kind of fits with her other pillars of our economic agenda, which is to make housing easier to afford, target price gouging in the grocery industry, target the price gouging in the pharmaceutical industry, expand child tax credit. Each of these things is meant to either one, lower costs for families, or two, expand opportunities for middle class and working class families.
And again, just contrast that to something that Donald Trump said just yesterday again, when it comes to just that one trick pony on corporate taxes.
Yeah, he explicitly said in a speech before the Economic Club of New York, whatever that is, that Kamala was vowing to raise taxes on big corporations, which is accurate. She does want to raise corporate taxes after Trump slashed them in 2017. And in the next breath, he said he would cut taxes, corporate taxes, from 21% to 15%, which would be far below most other, you know, advanced Western nations. And so he's straight up admitting he wants to help the rich get richer. And, you know, I think that says a lot. He, you know, Trump and Vance try to claim that they're populist, that they're pro-worker, that they'll take on the elites and the rigged establishment. But they are the establishment, and they're showing that they'll just benefit companies like Google and Apple and Facebook and Amazon and all these giants who have more money than God and don't need another tax cut.
No, they don't. And yet he promises that anyway. And then in the very next breath, he reverts away from anything closely resembling policy and gets back to some of his favorite, you know, rhetorical greatest hits, like playing the role of authoritarian and saying the exact quote was, "Two can play that game," when he says, you know, that his political opponents are trying to jail him. Well, he's facing charges for, you know, criming. And that's different than just throwing your political opponent in jail. But Trump said it in such a way yesterday that, you know, you don't doubt for a moment that if he were to win in November, he would abuse the justice system that way.
Yeah, I mean, we saw he already tried to at the end of his first term with, you know, Jeffrey Clark in the Justice Department trying to overturn and find, you know, evidence of fraud and really just pressure people to help him stay in office,
which, by the way, this new Supreme Court says is an official act.
Not, and
so you would get immunity for that.
Yeah.
So he's telling you he will do it again because the Supreme Court now backs him up, and he's still got supporters like Carrie Lake in Arizona, who thinks it would be great to have an authoritarian in the White House.
Yeah. You know, for folks who aren't as familiar, Carrie Lake ran for governor in Arizona in 2022 and, you know, ran such a poor campaign that she decided to attack John McCain and his family, and she lost. She's never quite admitted that she lost, but now she's running for Senate this year in Arizona, which is an implicit admission that she lost. And she's also on track to lose this race because you know, she is a fringe lunatic candidate. And, you know, she has a seeming fetish for praising foreign authoritarian leaders, from Vladimir Putin in Russia to Viktor Orban in Hungary to Nayib Bukele in El Salvador. And, you know, it's just it just doesn't stop. She is as much a Trump wannabe as I've ever seen. And, you know, so she mimics him and just praises these guys who are, you know, teetering on fascism in some cases.
Yeah. And they're being assisted, you know, Trump's being assisted by allies like Carrie Lake, and the allies are being assisted by Russia, as as we learned in more detail this week, the ongoing Russian attempts to influence the election.
Yeah, so we saw this week that the Justice Department, I believe, filed a lawsuit or was able to discover that Russia is funneling money into right-wing media in America, including some of the most prominent, you know, streamers and podcasters, people like Tim Pool and Benny Johnson, who quite coincidentally are very anti-Ukraine and very anti-funding for Ukraine, and have spread really isolationist rhetoric. And, you know, people have... There's been a lot of evidence that, you know, Russia runs media disinformation campaigns in the U.S., the same way a lot of other countries do. But this is maybe the most direct evidence of it. And it's, you know, so cartoonishly clear and cynical that it, you know, these guys are just, they're flailing to defend themselves because there's no defense for it. They're Russian, basically, puppets.
Yes. Puppets is exactly the right word. And I've certainly used that word in many instances, some involving a certain U.S. senator from Wisconsin, who again this week has been critical of these efforts to stop Russian disinformation. There is a world of difference between, you know, the First Amendment right to be critical of, say, you know, President Biden or Vice President Harris, world of difference between that First Amendment right to criticize versus a foreign government making overt attempts to influence an election.
You know, there's, it's not to, you know, the U.S. has occasionally a history of meddling in foreign elections, and that's wrong. Like, no one should do that. No, it's just wrong all the way around. And so, you know, seeing... And, you know, what's grim is this is one of the most successful long term. They've just fully infiltrated the right at this point. You know, these talking points, you know, the fuel was already there. Like, the right has an old strain of isolationism dating back over 100 years. But, you know, it had been sidelined until Trump returned. And now it's just full fledged taking over the party again. You know, if he wins, we could see him try to leave NATO again. We could see him really just totally, you know, mess up the current geopolitical climate around the world, which is not in great shape to begin with, but, you know, he's a wrecking ball at pretty much everything. And so it is a terrifying thought that, you know, not only could he win and, you know, do those things, but there are seemingly an army of Russia-fueled media influencers on the right to help him spread whatever agenda he wants.
Right. Exactly. If you instead want to show that you're more in line with American values and American workers, well, you can't do better than talking to folks on their day off on Labor Day. Tim Walz came to Milwaukee and talked to Labor Fest there. And of course, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden were talking in Pennsylvania. Remind me again, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, what did they do on Labor Day?
From what I can remember, they did nothing.
Nothing. They did nothing. They just said, no, we don't need to do anything
Look, I did nothing on Labor Day, but I'm not running for president or vice president.
Exactly. Yes, you're not running for president. As I look around the state-based stories that you do for Courier Newsroom. Oh, and by the way, Courier Newsroom, adding an 11th state to the lineup this week. Welcome to Texas as part of the Courier family.
Courier is now in Texas, which is quite a large state, 254 counties. So, you know, starting out in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and eventually going to expand into other regions as well. But, yeah, it's very exciting. It's also a little terrifying because that's just more work and more responsibility. But, you know, I'm really optimistic about what we can do in Texas, too.
Well, our CEO at Courier, Tara McGowan, she'd had a post on Twitter, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but it was about the number of disengaged voters in Texas, people who, mm-hmm. who could vote but don't vote. And it is a scary big number. And that was her whole point is go talk to those folks. They're not all going to vote Democrat. They're not all going to vote Republican. But that's a whole lot of people that don't vote that could if you just bring them the news in a way that is appealing and fact-based and entertaining, you know, with stories of people and food and things like that. I mean, that's our secret sauce. It's why it's worked so well in all of our other states. And so I think we've really tapped into something in Texas there.
Yeah, and I think it'll be exciting to see it grow.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you in terms of the other states about North Carolina, Project 2025, you know, making it harder for North Carolina to do things like respond to hurricanes. We don't have time for that. But if we're going to say something about North Carolina, it's that the far right extreme wackadoodle candidate for governor, Mark Robinson, we've learned he now had a history of regularly visiting porn shops.
Yes, Mark Robinson, famously, you know, religious far-right conservative nowadays, spent a lot of time in the 90s and early 2000s, you know, at porn shops and private viewing booths, usually after his pizza shift at Papa John's, apparently. The store's employees say he often went up to five nights a week and would pay for two rentals, essentially. You know, look, I don't care who watches porn, as long as you're an adult. But if you're running for governor on a platform of attacking, you know,
everybody else's morality.
Exactly. And claiming that, you know, gay people are, you know, gay people's identity and the discussion of gay people in schools at all is pornography. You probably, you know, shouldn't have an actual history of blowing hundreds of dollars a month on pornography while claiming to be this righteous person. It's just, you know, come on.
If you're going to cast stones, tie a note to it explaining your hypocrisy before you cast that very stone. Kiev Akil, Career Newsroom National Correspondent, thank you so much, as always, for the update. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat.
Back with more right after this. You're up north. Roger Waters, bassist and co-lead vocalist for Pink Floyd, is 79 years old today. Seems like Something Mellow is the appropriate song to bring us into today's history lesson, because there are a few sad notes to get going on this September 6th, 2024. Hard to believe now that it has been 27 years on this day. The funeral for Diana, Princess of Wales, took place in London. A million people lined the streets. 2.5 billion people watched around the world. On this day in 1901, an unemployed anarchist shot and fatally wounded President William McKinley in Buffalo, New York. The president would die 9 days later of his injuries. There was a terrible plane crash in Milwaukee on this day in 1985. So nearly 40 years ago, that Midwest Express Flight 105 crashed near Mitchell Field, killing all 31 people on board. Now we can take a look at some of the things that were more positive and uplifting in the history books. On this day in 1995, this was when Baltimore Orioles shortstop Cal Ripken played in his 2,131st consecutive game, breaking the record held by Lou Gehrig. And baseball was, back then, in September of 1995, still coming out of the strike-shortened season earlier. And Cal Ripken's milestone, while I don't think anybody should even try to match that again, it really meant something at the time. It was to see that kind of a work ethic, to see that kind of joy in baseball again after a strike, I think did the country a lot of good. I know I sure watched that as he took that lap around the field and got cheered on by the crowd and shook all those hands. And, you know, that was the hero we needed at that time, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you had that. And then in the coming years, regardless of controversy and whatnot, you had Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa just hitting the living heck out of baseballs. And that those things brought excitement back to baseball for people and for the fans. Because, man, baseball fans went to games to boo the MLB just to hold signs saying how much they dislike them.
Yes. There were people talking about whether baseball would survive because that strike season was botched so badly. And thankfully, baseball made a return and then really saved themselves a couple of years back, putting that pitch clock in play. That has done wonders for the game as well. All right, let's go to some birthdays here. A lot of ladies with birthdays today worth celebrating. We've got, for example, Cece Peniston, who is 55 years old today. She had this hit back in 1991. We also have R&B singer Macy Gray. She is 57 years old today, and her big hit, I Try, and I forgot to put down what year that came back from, but here's a little bit of Macy Gray.
I'll keep my cool, but I'm 1999.
Greg, it was 1999. Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We're breaking news now. 1999.
Macy Gray, 57 years old today. Melancholy birthday note here. Dolores O'Riordan, lead singer for the Cranberries, would have been 53 years old today. Born in County Limerick, Ireland, but we lost her way too soon in 2018 at the age of 46. Play a little bit more from her as the morning goes on. Let's see. Happy 50th birthday to Nina Persson from Sweden. You don't know her, but you know the group. I think it's fair to call them one-hit wonders, but the Cardigans' Love Fool was a big song back in the day. Again, happy birthday to Nina Persson.
They had a really good Black Sabbath cover, too. I think it was Iron Man. They got a lot of news for doing Iron Man. So.
All right. So a lot of solo ladies on the birthday list. Then you've got the women of Bananarama. Their cover of Venus hit number one this day in 1986. Does that not sound as 80s as it gets with the keyboard there? Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew.
And one of the ladies from Bananarama is married to Andrew Ridgely, formerly of Wham.
Is that so?
Yep.
Funny thing is, I mean, they were a true super group in that they sold a lot of albums, especially in Europe. Made a lot of money. I couldn't name one of them. You know, it wasn't like Destiny's Child where Beyonce kind of emerged from that.
No viable
no household artist. Names.
Yeah,
nothing like that.
Which one of you is Banana? Which one's Rama?
You're right. Former Governor Chris Christie is 62 years old today. Actor Idris Elba is 52 years old today. You know the Beatles song "While My Guitar Gently Weeps," and you might think that's a George Harrison guitar solo, because, I mean, it's a George Harrison song. But no, that's an Eric Clapton guitar solo, which he recorded for the Beatles on this day in 1968.
Still my guitar gently weeps.
The song was written by George Harrison, and he and Eric Clapton would play it together during some live shows. And famously, That's the song that was played for Harrison's 2004 induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after George Harrison had passed away. And in this song was the subject of a solo. Well, it was a group effort, but then Prince basically took it over and did the final solo of this song, throwing the guitar into the air at the end of it. The guitar never came down. You know, legend has it.
It's somewhere around Venus.
Right? We actually talked about this a year ago, that finally the real story had come out, that he had thrown it perfectly to his guitar technician, who then, I guess, handed it to Oprah Winfrey, who was in the crowd that night for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
Of course. So,
yeah, of course. Of course. It was Prince. It was Oprah. It was magic. What are you going to do? All right. On the National Day calendar today, it is National Read a Book Day. It is Fight